interesting. You know, I think there is something about a healthy dose of a child really understanding the word no, really understanding what that means. And, you know, funny movie. In fact, what's funny about that pain on his face is it actually got on there and it wouldn't come off because he couldn't control the kids under the parenting parameters that were given. And, you know, I think we experience that a lot of times. You have to ask yourself, you know, what is it about mother figures and father figures? You ever wonder that? I mean, you know, we all want a good mom, right? We all want a good dad. And whenever we don't have a good mom or we don't have a good dad, you know, somehow we end up in therapy. Have you ever noticed that? And, you know, animals on the farm, think about them. They don't end up in therapy if they don't have a good mom or dad. I mean, the cows, if the calf doesn't grow up just like the dad, the cow, I mean, nobody's in therapy there. Or, you know, Animal Planet, I mean, you don't see the lions having a family reunion every year. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And yet, in the physical family, we want a good mother. We want a good father. In fact, I think we're actually ingrained with that. There's something that we long for in that. And when it doesn't happen, we often end up in therapy because I think we think that there's something special, something magical, something even spiritual when it comes to physical family. And so, you know, it doesn't matter whether your child is 14 or you're 44. Or your child, or your parent who's 25 or 85, you know, we long for those intimate connections with our kids, with our parents. And today we're going to take a look at, you know, what it means to be parented, what it means to parent, and how this actually mirrors or is modeled in the eternal, in the eternal realms, in the spiritual realm. And so we're going to be taking a look at how there's a parenting model in that God kind of gives to us, and we'll take a look at how He often parents us this way. So I'm really excited you're here today. My name's Kurt, by the way. I'm the pastor here at Cross Point, and happy Mother's Day to those of you who are moms. And as we get going today, let's take a moment and pray. God, I'm thankful for every mom that's in this room, for every one of us who had a mother that built into our lives and to know the power of that influence. I'm thankful, God, that we can come into a room like this, and I just pray that you would help us to see the beauty of being a parent today, and that more of us would even see the beauty of how you are a good dad, how you are a good heavenly father, and how we have this great model in you of how we can be good parents, good mothers, good fathers, and how that can affect our physical lives. And I know right now you're actually affecting all of our lives. You're actually in a place, and we're ready to maybe take some steps to be challenged to grow. And I just pray that you would help us to do that today. I pray that you'd use my words and that they would be in alignment with your heart and your truths. I pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. Well, you know, the former Secretary of the Treasury, Catherine Ortega, she said this. She said, "My signature appears on $60 billion of U.S. currency. More importantly, however, is the signature that appears on my life. The strong, proud, assertive handwriting of a loving mother and a loving father." And I think that's true. I think, you know, our parents have this ability, for positive or negative, to have a very positive, very powerful influence in our lives. And God, He actually equates Himself to a heavenly Father. He's actually referred to in the Scriptures in pronouns, or pronouns used to describe God, and most of them are in the masculine form. And it's not that He's trying to communicate power necessarily. It's not necessarily that He's trying to, hey, I have a lot of force right here. But God is referred to in the personal pronoun sense. And really what's trying to be done there is there's trying to be this sense that God actually has a personality, that He actually has an identity, and He's somebody who builds into us. And so we're going to kind of go back and forth today, seeing how God builds into our lives and how this model can actually be used in the same way as we parent our children. And I'm the first to say, you know, nobody wants unsolicited parenting advice, right? I mean, the last thing we want is that. So I'm really going to walk that line tight today, and because I really want us to see the truths that actually come out of some of the ways that God parents us. And some of the things I'm going to say today are countercultural. Some of these things I'm going to say today, you're not going to agree with. I'm going to tell you right up front, there are going to be things that you're just kind of like, man, I would never do that. I can't believe Kurt and Julie do those things in their house. But, you know, listen, I'm going to give you a lot of examples. And you're going to be able to kind of say, you know, this is what we might do this. But hopefully through the whole process, my goal is that at least we come to the place where you're maybe pushed a little bit or challenged as we look at this model that God gives to us. Because the knockoff view of parenting is kind of this view where I take the cheaper version of parenting based on whatever is expedient at the time. Whatever the easiest route is right now, I'm going to take that. Or, you know, whatever is most socially acceptable, I'm going to take that route. And so we're going to look at some of the things that maybe, you know, we fall into, and it takes us into this knockoff view of parenting, because I really want us to see the best product when it comes to parenting is one that God actually gives to us, this model of how He parents us. And the first thing we see, one of the very first things, the most important things, is to see that what God does with us in the family is that He's the most important figure. All right, I'm not the most important figure in God's family. It's not me. It's not you. The scriptures actually talk about how God will be exalted. The Father will be exalted, which, by the way, is not me. And I think we really get this wrong in our physical families. I think we exalt the child way, way, way too much. I think we exalt the child and lift them up as the most important thing. And as if you're a parent today, I just want to tell you, you are the MVP in your family. You are the most important player when it comes to your family relationship. And I think you're going to see, as we look at this relationship that we have with God today, this is mirrored in the eternal realm as well. In fact, we all know that old illustration, you know, of you're getting on an airplane and they go through all the, here's the training things before you take off. And, you know, if the plane goes down and the oxygen masks fall out of the ceiling, what do? If you have a child with you? You put the mask on first so you're prepared and capable of helping your children. What I hope to do today is to actually maybe bring some oxygen today to enable us to take care of our child and to really see this model that God lays out for us. So we're going to look at four distinct phases of parenting today. And these are sequential, they're chronological, and you're going to see that some of them, there's blurry lines. You might teeter in one phase and then the next phase, then go back to the previous one. And then some of them have real clear-cut places where it's real clear what's going on right here. And as we look at this today, what we're going to see is this is actually the model that comes out of God's character. This is how God parents us. And so the first phase that you go through, if you have a child, when the child comes into your home, is you go through the nurse phase. And so to help you remember this, we all, in the early phases, are nurses, all right? Which means, in the nurse phase, it means you're wiping, you're feeding, you're changing, all right? You're cleaning up poop. That's what happens. And what does a nurse get out of that? I mean, think about a hospital. I mean, a nurse gets nothing other than what? At least they get a paycheck, right? A nurse in a hospital gets a paycheck. But what else does a nurse get from their patients? Nothing, zero, nada. There's nothing they get. And so in the nurse phase, you really don't get a whole lot, unless this is your default mode, by the way. In our default mode of parenting, as we go through these, what I want you to do is identify, what's my default mode? What's the mode? I'm like, man, I'm really good at this one. Because most likely, that's where you camp out, and that's where you spend most of your parenting time. And the challenge is, how do we progress through these as our kids mature? And so, you know, some of us are really good nurses. I mean, you're great at playing the nurse role. You're great at taking care of the poop and the pee and feeding and making sure everything's taken care of. And one of the problems you might be running into is your kids might not want to be nursed anymore. Your kids might not want to be coddled anymore. They may be ready for adventure, and you're still trying to do the nursing thing. And this was the hardest thing for me. I mean, the nursing phase was hard for me. I mean, our kids are now 10, 9, 6, and 3. So we're out of the nursing phase, and we're not planning to go back there. And I've realized, you know, the wiping things, the cleaning up things, the feeding things. I mean, that was, you know, that just for me, I don't do that well. I'm kind of like, oh, you need something? Stand up and get her done. You know, the empathy side of me does not go real well on those fronts. Even though I think I was a good dad on this, I remember standing in a restaurant bathroom after there's like a blowout in the diaper one day, you know, and standing there cleaning this, and it stinks, and, you know, it's once the poop starts stinking, it's that phase, you know, and this grandfatherly figure walks in, and he's like, oh, you know, enjoy this time, it goes by so fast. I just remember thinking, man, I sure hope it does. This sucks. I hate cleaning up poop when I'm trying to enjoy a good dinner. You know, I just remember thinking that, and yet, what I've realized now that I'm out of that phase is that I think maybe he had something going there. I think, you know, I miss that a little bit, if I can be honest. I miss the phase where they just cuddle and can't say anything back to me. And, you know, I miss that. I miss that. I think there's something about that. And God actually nurses us as well. Take a look at this. Book of Psalms, chapter 131, verse 2. It says this, "But I have calmed and quieted myself. I am like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content." You know, God predominantly in the Bible is referred to, again, in the masculine form. And so, you know, it's interesting because, you know, personal pronouns are used here. And at times we think of God in the masculine, yet he doesn't have genitalia. I mean, it's not masculine in nature, yet that's how he's often referred to. And right here, we actually see God being referred to, equating God to a nursing mother. And that line right there always kind of confused me. I'm like a weaned child with its mother. And it's interesting. I've interacted with a number of mothers who breastfed their children when they were young. My wife breastfed our children, and I remember this talk about there being this very defined moment when the child is weaned. And before the child is weaned, the mother's like a feeding station, right? I mean, it's like every time that child is with the mother, they're like, gimme, 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 gimme. They're like, arr, arr, like the rooting phase, right? Remember that? I mean, that's what they look like every time they're with the mom. And the mother has a really hard time in that phase actually having any relationship with the child other than give, 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 take, take, take. I remember Julie at times handing me one of the children, one of the babies, saying, I can't hold her right now. I mean, she wants something. I'm not ready to feed her. And so there's a very defined point where, you know, that once the child is weaned, we're actually capable of developing a whole different kind of relationship with the mother. Because, see, you're not a feeding station anymore. You can actually have relationship without just this constant give, 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 you know. And so it's interesting because this is kind of how it is with God as well. I mean, when we first come to God, when we first begin a relationship with God, a lot of times we're broken, we're hurting. Maybe there's certain things we can't do for ourselves. There's things that we can't fend off for ourselves. You know, and maybe we're confused, mixed up. And God nurses us. He nurses us. And there's something very intimate that happens in that nursing phase. Very intimate. And yet, if we're not careful, before long, we find that we just kind of want to stay in the nursing phase. We want to stay in that give me, give me, give me, I take, take, take. And the relationship's all about us. We just kind of suck the life right out of God, if we, not that that's fully possible. We're like, God, I just want to be and suck, just keep sucking right out of who you are. Because we never want to move out of that phase. And we think it's all about us. So the nursing phase, there's a physical nursing phase, and then there's a spiritual nursing phase. Now, the second phase, kind of interesting, because this is one of those places, you know, some of these have a very clear delineation, others, you kind of teeter back and forth with them. This next phase is one that it has a very clear delineation, and this one happens around the time when your children are somewhere between the age of like 18 and 24 months, and maybe you give a very specific instruction, and you know that they understand what you ask them, and you hear this word right here, no! You know, when they very clearly understand, and when that happens, you quickly become the king. This is called the king and the queen phase, all right? Kings for dads, queens for moms. Now, you know, I know this is a really radical idea for some of us, but I'm going to affirm you right now. You know way more than your children know. All right? Believe me, you do. I know this is like a news flash for some of us. Your reality is a lot clearer than your children's. Your knowledge level, your experience level is way broader than your child. It's interesting. I see way too many, you know, kid parents reasoning with their 3- and 4-year-old. I mean, I'm like, oh my goodness, seriously. You know, parents reasoning with a 3-year-old trying to really help, you know, see it. Is their reality better than mine? No, it's not. You know what a child needs when they're 3 or 4? They need to be told what to do. All right, they need to be told what to do. It's a very defining mark in the parenting process. It's you king your child or you queen your child. And when you do this, what you're doing is you're basically communicating to them, hey, I'm the authority. Here. You are not the authority. I am the authority. We go through this with our kids all the time. Who's the boss? I'm the boss. Who's the boss? Dad, you're the boss. Are you the boss? No, you're not the boss. I'm the boss. Julie's the boss. And I mean, we're very clear with our kids who the boss is. In fact, here's what the book of Hebrews says, chapter 12, verses 5 to 9. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the ones he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. For it is discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline in which all have participated, when you are illegitimate children, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us and we respected them. So you're actually respected when you discipline. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live. So this tells us that God disciplines us. This tells us that this is what kings and queens do. They discipline. They bring authority. And what this really says is on a bigger level is if you choose not to take on this role, if you choose not to king your children, not to queen your children, what this actually says is it's actually like you're saying, I don't really love you. Because this is what parents do. Parents communicate love by being an authority. And it's easy. Listen, I've done it probably hundreds of times. Take the easy way out. Not step in, not be the authority. Allow them to have their way and not just step in. And it's interesting because, the word discipline, actually, it comes from the root word disciple. So when Jesus has these disciples who are very faithful followers who have been trained in the way of God, it's actually because they've been disciplined. They've gone through the nurse phase, and now they're in the discipline phase in the form of becoming a disciple. And just like a parent physically kings and queens his child, God kings us. And see, this is where a lot of us have outages with God right here. Because, see, we have outages with God because, you know, we've never had a relationship with God or with anybody in a physical realm where somebody was in authority with us. And so, you know, we've never settled that Jesus is king because we've never had that authority figure physically in our lives. And we never settled in our mind that, you know, Jesus' way goes. I mean, Jesus' way is always best. We're like, Jesus' way good some of the times. Other times it's not. See, that's when we get king. That's when we as earthly children get kinged. And sometimes we're like, I just want the God concept. I want the feel-good things that come with knowing I'm loved, but I don't like to get kinged. And see, there's a major, major thing that happens, a major outage that happens. We don't see ourselves as a child who's been kinged. But see, when we begin to realize that there's an authority over me, that I actually submit to a physical authority in my earthly parents as a child, and with my heavenly Father, there's something that takes place right here. I'm amazed at this tool we have right at our fingertips called YouTube. I don't know if you ever do YouTube. Really fascinating. You can find anything on YouTube. God bless America for YouTube. I think we created it. I mean, it's a great tool. And I went on there and thought, I mean, I wonder if there's anything on disciplining or on parenting. And found some really fascinating stuff. I thought you'd be interested in a couple. Take a look at this one right here.
Sweetie, we're not getting a toy right now. Put that down, okay? Put that down. Let's get ready to go. Bye-bye. Do you need a toy, really? Put that down.
But I need it for.
I know, but Grandmama's gonna get you a toy later. Let's put that down, okay? Oh my goodness. Put it down. Put it down.
I want a toy. I want a toy!
We'll pick a toy from the front of the store. I know, but we'll get a toy from the front of the store.
Some of you are like, how did you know I was at the store this week? You know, the craziest thing is that Dad's taking that the whole time. He's actually videotaping this. There's a boy that needs to be kinged and a princess that needs to be queen. And you know, and if we don't get this, understand that this is a biblical model right here. There's something about understanding. We submit at certain points in our life. We have to learn this early, that we submit to an authority. And listen, if it doesn't happen here, I mean, there's some of that behavior that's where you start to nip it right there when they're 3, 4, 5. But if it doesn't get nipped, it begins to turn into this one. Take a look at this. There's another one I found.
Good, yeah, come on out. Right?
Happy birthday!
No way!
Happy birthday!
It's red.
Yeah, you don't know how
Dad,
hard
it's
this
a whole
was.
Dad, it's red! What?
Mackenzie,
Dad,
it's fine!
I asked you a million times I wanted a blue car, Dad!
Come on, Mackenzie!
Can you please
ask
me for a blue car,
Mackenzie?
Ryan, stop filming.
But,
okay,
oh, Dad, it's off.
Dad,
please. Just try it, okay?
Mackenzie, it's not that bad.
Wow. Wow. I mean, see, this right here is what happens when a young child doesn't get kinged and queened. I mean, when a young child isn't made aware that the world does not revolve around them, that they actually are not the center, they're not the most important person in the family, everything doesn't revolve around them. And here's what's true as well, before I get into the physical aspect of kinging and queening, you know, spiritually, this is where many of us are. You know, we don't like God telling us what to do. We don't like this idea of God, you know, saying, hey, I'm going to king you, you need to obey. And it all starts with the fact that we think our way goes. We think we don't have to submit, and it's all about us. And this is why, I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, God begins to king us, and we reject that, and we have an outage with God. And then we have all these doubts about God, and we're like a bunch of whiny kids. And we're like, I wanted the one to have the promotion! I mean, come on. I mean, what else do we do that about? I want to be married! I mean, I've seen this before. Oh, how about this one? I wanted my presidential candidate to win. You know, the hanging it out is what really gets it. You know, we're like a bunch of whiny kids. You know what that's about right there? That's somebody who doesn't get the idea of what it means to be kinged. It's critical, critical. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise. So this is the very first commandment that's a promise. So that it may go well with you and you may enjoy a long life on earth. So what this says is, parents, you need to get your kids to obey, not rationalize with them, not have a conversation. They need to obey. Why? Because life will go well for you and you will have a long life. In the same way, fathers and mothers as well, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. See, this is hard for some of us, what I'm about to say here in a few moments, because many of us, some of us, have had parents who exasperated us. We had parenting that was done really, really bad. We had discipline that was done really, really bad. And so what happens is we mindlessly follow or fall into the trap of those same pathways. And it's a knockoff version because it's mindless, because we're not even really putting energy in. It's just natural and normal. And that's what actually happens. Sometimes it's destructive. You know, if you were abused as a child, you had bad, bad parenting, then it's easy. It's mindless for you to just follow in that path and abuse your children. Or the flip of that happens, if you had really bad parenting and you were abused, you might do the pendulum swing on that, and you might be like, oh man, I'm never disciplining my kids because I'll never let them experience what I did. And that's mindless as well. And so, you know, this says we need to not exasperate our children in a way that it creates long-term problems, but in the same way, we have to get our children to obey. Just like God tries to get you and I to obey. Let me say that again. God wants you and I to obey. And, you know, sometimes you're like, oh man, God's lovey-dovey God. I mean, he's okay if I just do whatever I wanted. No, God wants you to obey. He really does. And so, you know, any healthy parent actually disciplines their child, is what this is saying, to get them to obey. He disciplines them. So I want to talk about a few of the ways that this happens for us. And this is application time. This is one of those moments where, you know, I'm going to share some of the things we do. And you can take these, you can toss these. Many of you are probably doing some of these same things. Some of these you may not agree with. But you know, you need to figure out what works for you. You owe it to your children to figure out what works to discipline and to get your children to obey. And so there's a number of methods we use, anything from, you know, timeouts to taking away privileges to, you know, taking away electronics. One of our kids is without electronics until the end of this month now. It just changed from Memorial Day till the end of this month, just this morning. And you know, we do things like that. I stole a notebook page out of one of my neighbors this week because I heard their kids had some sentences, and I thought, man, that was a great idea. One of our kids spent 2 days inside writing sentences about what respect means and how they will do it. And, you know, after 2 days, they started, you know, with 1 day's worth probably, and it got to 2 days by the end of all the attitude that went through it. You know, there are a lot of ways, but I want to talk about something we don't talk about very often, at least in church, and that's spanking. All right, I'm going to sound a little old school, but I'm going to go old school a little bit. And let me tell you know, some of you aren't going to agree with this. It's cool. I am not here to try to get you to convince you spanking is something you should do. At the same time, you know, if you see spanking as a beneficial form of discipline, then, you know, when done appropriately, I might add that, let me just tell you, that it's a biblical model. There's actually, you know, in the Bible, it talks about bringing the rod, and the rod doesn't kill the child, all right? But what it does is it actually shows that you love the child. Now, a rod is not a metal, like, you know, metal piece of like a rebar, all right? We're talking like a, you know, some force, something that's not your hand. I mean, you never want your kids, you know, thinking your hand when it comes at them, this is the what's, you know, bringing pain. It needs to be some, you know, some object, good, you know, so. And I wish I could go through the whole process of, because, you know, this is spanking's about a 15-minute process. 20 minutes, maybe. I mean, it's not like you just do it and move on. I mean, you can't do it out of anger. You know, you have to talk calmly to your children. You actually, you know, do the spanking. And then after they're done crying, you actually follow up and talk about why that happened. And you know, and one of the reasons that I believe and that we do spanking is because it's instantaneous learning. I mean, it's just like this. I mean, it's like you go into the classroom, and we do timeouts too. But I think timeouts at times are for certain things, but there's a long learning process with timeouts. And sometimes things just need instantaneous learning. It's like touching a stove. You touch it once, oh man, that hurts. I don't touch the stove again. You know, and so there are times for this to happen. And listen, there's instantaneous retention as well. And so I wish I had the time, probably another time, to walk out, you know, just that process, what that looks like. Because for some of us, it's not been done appropriately. But I can tell you, my parents, you know, spanked us. We've spanked our kids. I've not done it right sometimes. I've done it the wrong way. And just like my parents, I know there are a few times I was the end of anger, I think, and it wasn't done right. But I can tell you I have a great relationship with my parents today. I didn't ruin my relationship with my parents just because they made some mistakes with it. And listen very carefully right here. I could care less if you spank or not, but I want to tell you something. It's really, really important that you figure out how to get your kids to obey. If you don't, there will be outages not only with you, but with God. It just happens. It's like one and then the other happens. I mean, if kids don't learn to be under submission, they will never learn what that means to have that with their father, their heavenly father. And, I interact with people. You know, they've been Christian for 10 years, baptized, believe in the Bible, and yet they have outages. They don't do the mindless thing that the Bible talks about. And I don't say mindless because it's easy. I say mindless because it's just obvious, the mindless thing of like giving 10% of their income back to the work of the local church. They don't do that because they've never learned that there's a king that they have to submit to. And so they're like, I'll choose, pick and choose what I want to do. Well, this is somebody that needs to be king who's never submitted to that process. It's why many of us have outages with God, because the rough stuff of obedience, we're not willing to walk the path. And that submission path is a hard path, and we've just never chose to do it. It's never happened. And eventually, the cards will come down. Something hard's going to happen, and you're not going to have the maturity to actually endure through that thing because you've never grown. You've never grown. And, God's goal is not a nice, cush life for you or for his children. It's to grow you, to mature you, so that there's a depth, just like for our children. We want there to be a depth to them. We want them to be productive adults that have a depth and meaning and purpose in their life. And I think that's the goal of parenting physically as well as our earthly or heavenly father. All right, the next phase we go through is what's known as the coach phase. Every great king, when he is on the battlefield in ancient times, every great king, he would go out on the battlefield with the warriors. He would stand in the middle of the battlefield, and he would basically tell the warriors what to do, because really, the warriors were doing the work of battle, and he's like, they're not ready to make the decisions yet, so I'm going to be on the battlefield with them to tell them what to do. They're not in a place of being ready to do that on their own. When you coach, you step off of the playing field, and you begin to go on the sidelines, and you're like, all right, here we go. Here's what you're doing now. I'm going to encourage you. I'm going to coach you. I'm going to, you begin to challenge and champion and encourage them. And this is a kind of an interesting phase because, in the king-queen phase, there's a right and wrong to everything. You're kind of instilling a framework for understanding the difference between right and wrong. When you get to the coaching phase, you begin to realize, and this was hard for me spiritually, that God doesn't necessarily have an opinion on everything. All right, and this was interesting for me because, as I became a Christian, I began to see in the Bible there were certain things in my life that were very obvious that I wasn't doing. I'm like, man, I need to do those. God wants me to do those things. And so I began to see that, man, God has very clear things that are very obvious I need to do. But then I also began to translate that and think, man, God has a very clear decision for every decision in my life. And I began to try to decode what is it he wants in this and that. And I began to realize I don't think that God has an opinion on everything. I think there's certain things he's very clear on, but when you get into this phase, you have the framework, there are certain things that aren't as clear or that he doesn't have an opinion on. For instance, I don't think he has an opinion on what car you should buy. I really don't. People say, man, God told me this is the car. I don't think he has an opinion. I think you might want to think that. I don't think he has that opinion. I think what God's saying, he's saying, as a coach, he's saying, come on, hey, get something with little debt, all right? Don't get a big car payment. But I could care less if it's red or if it's a Honda or, it's a Chevrolet. I could care less, but get something that's not going to keep debt over your head for a long time. Spousal selection. I used to think, man, God's got one person. My goal in life is to find her. All right, I got to navigate life and decode which one it is. So every date was like, is this the one? I've changed. I don't believe that. I could have married 100 different women probably. And been, God would have been fine with it. Julie, she could have married thousands of guys. All right, she had all kinds of options. I really don't think God has an opinion. But I do think he coaches. I think he's like, hey, all right, come on. It's really important you're equally yoked. Don't marry somebody of a different spiritual family. I think that's what he coaches us on. When it comes to occupation, career, again, I think he's coaching, but there's not like the right and the wrong. See, there's a major thing right here in the coaching phase. And this is a hard one for parents. I've observed this. For many people, it's hard to get out of the king-queen phase and move to the coaching phase. Very hard transition. Here's what it says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God who calls you into his kingdom and glory. So the words here, encouraging, comforting, urging, this is what a coach does, right? No longer is there physical punishment. No longer, you know, is there that kind of punishment. Now it's like taking things away, taking away privileges, taking away electronics. You know, you're allowing your kids now to kind of experience life, make their own decisions with parameters, with encouragement, with coaching, with comforting. Now, right now, our oldest daughter is almost 11 years old. And we kind of go back and forth. She's in the coach phase, but I'm still the king at times. For instance, a couple weeks ago, she came and said, "Dad, I want to go to this place, you know, and I want to hang out with just my friends. And by the way, you don't know them. And the mom that you don't know either is going to take us there." And I'm like, "Absolutely." And she starts getting all excited. I'm like, "Not! There's no way that's happening. You're 10. There's no way that's happening." Now, if I knew the parents, if I knew the kid, maybe I would have allowed that to take place. But, you know, that's something that, for me at least, is probably more like 13, 14. Years old when I don't know the parent, but I've given her more framework, I've given her more experience, because I also know that like at 16, she's going to be driving by herself, and so she needs the framework. I've got to begin a gradual release of her, because I also know when she gets to like 17 and 18, she's going to have boyfriends. Maybe it's going to be like 30, but she thinks it's going to be like 17 or 18. And I also know that, you know, I'm still going to be coaching at that phase, but I'm not sitting there with her boyfriend saying, "Oh, don't do that, but you should do this, but don't touch that." I'm not going to be doing that, all right? I'm not. Some of you are laughing because that's what you're doing, right? But see, here's what that conversation will look like, though. When she's 17 or 18, serious with somebody, I'll probably have the conversation like, "Hey, you know, tell me what you're thinking sexually. You know, what are you thinking? What kind of boundaries have you guys talked about? Because, man, I'm sure with you guys are pretty serious now, and I know there's got to be a lot of temptation. And, you know, what kind of things have you talked about? I mean, how far is too far? And what does that look like for you guys? I mean, help me understand that." And she'll be like, "Well, I mean, we've done this, but, you know, we haven't done that." And you're sitting there going, "Awkward." But I tell you what, if you've nursed, and then you've king and queened, and you've set the framework, and then you've appropriately coached and gradually released, when you get to that point, I mean, you can have that conversation with confidence that they're getting it. And it's amazing, you know. And listen, it's not going to go always the way you want, but we have to engage in this mode. And in many ways, I identify with this mode the best. I mean, the coach mode is what I identify with, even though I'm just beginning to get to it as a parent. It's hard as a parent. There's times where my oldest is telling me something, and I'm not listening. I'm like, nope. And, you know, and I realize I've got to start listening. I'm entering the phase where I've got to start listening more. And as a pastor, I do this as well. I mean, in case you haven't noticed, I'm not like a traditional pastor. You know, I'm more of like a spiritual coach. And much of what I do is bringing insights and trying to steer our lives in this direction or that direction based on what we see in the scriptures. And now with, like, I have different hats here. I mean, with my role as lead pastor, I'm a boss. And so there's times where I am the authority, I am the king. My staff team goes through different phases. We bring somebody brand new in, they go through the nurse phase where it's kind of like, okay, we're going to help you understand. We're going to help you just get a feel. And then we go through the king-queen phase. This is how we do it. And then eventually, once there's confidence built and maturity and leadership developed, we move to the next phase. I mean, it's interesting. This is a universal process for how God grows us. It's how we parent our kids. It's how we can develop leaders. It's amazing. And the whole goal of this process, whole goal, isn't that you're doing parenting for the rest of your life, but it's to get to the last phase, which has no hat, and that is the friend phase. See, the problem is we want to be friends in phase 1, 2, and 3, and if you shortchange this and friend in the first 3 phases, you blow it for the rest of that kid's life, or at least you put a high trajectory chance that it's not going to happen later in life. See, there's something that happens in that nursing phase where an intimacy is developed that we just want to go on forever and ever. We want that family relationship. In fact, Jesus talked about this in John chapter 15. Now, Jesus is still king, by the way, but he also talks about it in this way. He says, "You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you." He says, you're a friend. He says, when you get to this phase, you're a friend. See, when you're a king, everybody knows you're the king, and there's certain things you don't understand, and that's why you need a king. But when you realize that, you know, that God's saying now, no, once you've gone through this process, you're more like a friend. I'm communicating you at a bigger level. I'm giving you like kingdom values right here. I'm letting you get an insight into the bigger thing because you're now at my level. And what's fascinating about this is the king still nurses us when we need it. I mean, the king still coaches us. The king still kings us when we're not doing the obvious. But, you know, when we think about coaching, I mean, God will put us in places where, you know, we're like, man, I don't know if I can go through this right now. And we're like, God, why are you doing this? And yet God coaches us because he's trying to help us grow. He's trying to stretch us. A few weeks ago, month and a half ago maybe, I was at one of the Pacer games with a couple of my kids. And I thought, you know, we're sitting there, and it wasn't a real high-attended game. I thought, this is a good opportunity to kind of coach my kids a little bit. So I said, you know, guys, you want some popcorn? Like, oh, yeah, we like some popcorn. You know, and so I pull out a 20, and I said, Mike, here's a $20 bill. Why don't you guys go up and get a thing of popcorn and, you know, big Diet Coke and the souvenir cup, and we'll refill it all night long. And they're like, okay. And they're like, well, come on. I'm like, no, you guys can do it. You can do it. And they look at me like, and I'm like, no, we've been here a couple times now. You can walk up the aisleway here. It's right behind out the aisleway. Just walk up. You're very capable of this. And so they very cautiously, you know, keep looking back, you know. And so like 8 minutes pass, 10 minutes pass, and I'm getting a little nervous. Right? I'm like, how am I going to explain this to Julie when it goes bad, right? Which, by the way, if we were like in Manhattan, yeah, the Knicks game wouldn't be happening, all right? Would not give this kind of thing. But, you know, this is banker's life. So, you know, before long, they come back down that aisleway, and I tell you what, they're like confident, bringing a big tub of popcorn, like, here, Dad, and this happened, and, you know, listen, they grew 6 inches right there. 6 inches. Why do I do that? Why do I do that? Because I want to elevate them to my level. They're not ready to be at my level yet, but I want to grow them, but I don't want to always be over them. I want to lift them up so they can begin to get up to my level. I want to coach them so they can be there, and I tell you what, for some of us, if you've got grown kids, some of you as kids might be in this situation. You might be a 20-something, a 30-something, a 40-something, even a 50-something, and you're still being kinged and queened by your parents. You're still being nursed by your parents. You don't want to be nursed anymore. You want to be friended. You just want to be friended. I mean, you go to that family wedding and, you know, you, or if you're a grown, you know, you're a parent of older kids, you know, your kids have a little too much to drink, and you notice, and you go up to them, and you're like, oh, man, you start, like, coming down on them, you know, and you know, is that the way you treat your best friend? I mean, that's the question you have to ask in the friend phase. When you get to the friend phase, then you say, you know, how do you decide how you treat your grown kids? You ask yourself the question, what would I say to my best friend right here, right? I mean, you don't say, oh, are you married yet? When are you getting married? I mean, you're never getting married. If you change X, Y, and Z in your life, then you'd get married. You know, best friends don't do that. I mean, when you're in the friend phase, you never say something to your grown kids that you wouldn't say to your best friend. And listen, this is huge. I mean, I know somebody who every time they go home, they get treated like a 10-year-old. And they're a grown adult. And you know what happens? They don't want to go home. They never want to go home. This is huge, huge. And listen, this is how you create a lifelong friend. This is the goal of parenting because, you know, jobs will come and go. You will take transfers to new communities. Friends will come and go, but family will be there forever. God built this mechanism in so you would have lifelong friends with your children. And he gives us this model, this example of how to accomplish it. And I can tell you one thing, it is very expensive. The knockoff is much cheaper. The knockoff is much easier. The knockoff is much more socially acceptable. And yet at the same time, this is kind of the process God is doing with us as well. I mean, God doesn't want us to be in the nursing phase our whole life. He doesn't want to be always feeding us and cleaning our poop and our junk up. I mean, you know, he wants to grow us. He wants to bring us to the point where he says, you're my friend. You don't want to command, you're my friend. And it's an amazing thing when we get there. Pray with me. God, I thank you for today. I thank you. I know I put a lot of stuff out there today. This process for some of us is brand new, and yet it's rooted in who you are and how you parent us. And God, I just pray that you would help us to make applications on this today. I pray that you just help us to see how we're maybe settling for the knockoff version in some part of our parenting experience, or maybe we're not parents yet, but we're going to learn. We're gonna get this thing down so that when we are parents, we can really do this thing well. God, the knockoff parenting version never goes to this depth. It never has this intentionality. And so God, I'm just going to pray that you would move us. I pray that you would inspire us. I'd pray that you would just help us to see how we can attain this expensive original, God, that you actually model for us. And as we listen to the words of this song, God, help us to see that the ramifications are huge. God, how we parent our children, God, this will impact how they parent their children. God, we do not want to take a shortcut on this one.